Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. So I was just talking to my producer about this, and I said, I don't know who, because I never really thought about who my favorite guest are, you know? I mean, this has been on WGN, I don't know, nearly 30 years of doing this radio show. I've had lots of guests on the show. In the top five, I know this would be this person right here from It's Me or the Dog, Victoria Stillwell. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Are you on the other side of the pond now, or are you in Atlanta?
I'm in Atlanta, but I really never know where I am.
Well, that makes two of us. I never know either. So there's so much to talk about with you. I almost don't know where to start. So what's happened over the past couple of years? Inexplicably to me, but maybe you can explain it, there's been a resurgence of what I hoped was going away. And that is just us not being kind to our best friends, using shock collars, using aversive or punishment-based training methods. You and I have talked about this a lot, but there's kind of been this discovery of these methods that are antiquated, proven scientifically not to work all that well, intimidate dogs, even hurt dogs, but yet here we are with the human-animal bond being more intense than ever before. Some people, not knowingly, I would argue, are doing bad things to their dogs and actually creating issues. Can you talk about all that?
I think it's always been there, Steve, but now it is being questioned on a level that it has been questioned before, but now it really is shocking, pardon the pun. And I think it is because there are more and more shock collar trainers out there that are touting their businesses, and they've got great marketing tactics. And one of them is that, you know, we are going to fix your dog. We guarantee behavior. Now, we know we can't guarantee behavior in anything, even humans. You can't guarantee how you're going to feel tomorrow, what you're going to say, what you're going to do, what's going to happen to you that is going to influence your behavior. So you can't ever guarantee an animal behavior, an animal's behavior, or a human's behavior. But they come out with this marketing that this is a quick fix for your dog, especially if your dog is showing aggressive behavior. And I have to say that this is a massive myth, that if your dog is showing some kind of reactive and or aggressive behavior, that you put a shock collar in and it will fix your dog. Well, actually, in the UK, the shock collar manufacturers, there is a disclaimer on the shock collars that, or e-collars, I should also say, that are being sold out there. And the disclaimer is you must not use these for dogs that are showing aggressive behavior. So, you know, people are so confused. Do you use them? Do you not? Do they work with aggression? Do they not? And that at the moment is something that is at the very forefront of our dog training industry right now.
In fact, you were talking about this in one of your podcasts that you do, which you can find in social media, Victoria Stillwell, on Instagram, where you just talk. And one of these conversations recently was about a group. So years ago, I brought together all these organizations and all these trainers with different mindsets. I was on the board of the American Humane Association at that time, and we created a handbook that everyone agreed about. A couple of folks didn't show up who were invited. The Dog Whisperer, who at that time, Cesar Millan, was kind of a big deal. His shows had great ratings. People were buying in. And then later on, when his shows disappeared, I thought, okay, all this is going to go away. But as you point out, it certainly has not. Again, in a very different way, all these trainers have come together with different perspectives, but things really, did they come to an agreement? I know you weren't there for a couple of reasons, which you'll explain in a moment. Did they ever come to an agreement?
No, they didn't come to an agreement. And I was invited to partake in this conversation that was organized by a trainer in the UK, and it was I guess the idea of it was good. Could you get trainers from either side of the debate? People who use shock collars, others who don't use shock collars or other aversives. Could you get the balanced trainers in with the positive trainers? And could there be some common ground found? Unfortunately, that sounds like a great thing, but unfortunately it wasn't, because certainly you had trainers from the shock collar industry, one quite well-known trainer from the shock collar industry that came in and was not interested in hearing anybody else's point of view, just totally interested in putting their point of view forward, but not being there to learn. And unfortunately, some of the trainers on the other side were maybe duped into saying something or agreeing that shock collars at times can work only in the hands of professionals. And this is very upsetting for the dog training community, especially the positive dog trainers, because we know that shock collars have such a detrimental effect on animals. If you're having to put a disclaimer on a piece of equipment, then, you know, rather like the television show that you're talking about, The Dog Whisperer, if there's a disclaimer on there, there's got to be something that is harmful to dogs or while you're doing it. And this whole idea that it works in the hands of professionals, but regular people shouldn't use them, is just, they shouldn't be used, period. And why, oh, why are we at this place where we feel like we need to use them? It is absolutely ridiculous.
All right. So you are in charge of the world, Victoria Stilwell. Would you ban, as some nations have, entire countries have done this, some cities in America have done this. San Francisco was looking at doing this. Sadly, they have yet to do so. Same in the UK, to my knowledge, they have yet to do so. Would you ban shock collars, outrightly say, you know, you can't sell them anymore?
Yes, I would. I would ban them being sold online, in stores. I would ban professionals from using them. I would ban the general dog lover out there from using them. I would get rid of them from all the shelves. And that's where I have to do a call out for Petco. They yes. haven't got rid of their electric fences yet, but they did get rid of their bark collars and their, as far as I understand, the bark collars, but also the shock collars. They do not sell them anymore and haven't done for a few years. Entire countries do not have a ban. And the UK, you know, the UK is four different principalities, as it were, Wales, England, Scotland, Northern Ireland. And Wales has had a ban in place for years. England will follow suit. It is going to happen. Then we just have to wait for Scotland and Northern Ireland to do it. So, people are beginning to realize that these things are very dangerous. They do what they are designed to do, which is to cause pain in dogs. And even when they are used, you know, I use this in quotes, correctly. So there is a real sense of urgency here that we are doing great damage to our dogs by using them. And so I would support a worldwide ban. That's not going to happen anytime soon, but it's where we need to consistently be working towards.
Yeah, of course, I agree with you. I want to talk about the collateral damage that happens when you use shock collars. And there are many trainers who say this. You have an aggressive dog. The only way to really deal with it, you can't use cookies. You can't use praise. At least that won't do any good. What will do good, and the only thing that will, is using a shock collar, which is providing an electric shock, literally, to your dog. Does that work? We'll talk about that and what she's doing right now, which is so exciting, with Victoria Stilwell when we come back on WGN. From It's Me or the Dog, it's Victoria Stilwell, the one and only, who is so sick of me saying it like that, probably. Hi, Victoria. You still there?
Hi. Never, never, never.
You're not there. She's going away. She's disappeared. Never. What
I'm
do you mean?
Here.
Okay.
I think I'm here. You can hear me. No, I'm never, never, never. I love it when you say that. It always makes me smile.
Well, we need to make our dogs smile more. And, you know, shock collars aren't going to do that, I don't think. That's what we were talking about. Okay, you use a shock collar. Does it cause additional damage? Let's say your dog is jumping all over the place. Let's say your dog is aggressive to other dogs. Does the shock collar ever do what it is intended to do, which is to stop that behavior you don't want?
You know what? I have to say, I mean, it can. And the reason why I'm saying it can is because it works, because pain works. And if you're okay inflicting that on your dog, well, then, you know, that's a shame. But, and I feel sorry for your dog, but that's the way it is.
All right. Now stop, stop. Because I want to, let's say you're okay with that because you think, all right, doing that is better than what would happen next, which is me giving up the dog. But let's talk about the collateral damage that we know happens. That's probably where you were about to go.
It was. So here's the thing. When you shock a dog, let's say the dog is reacting at something, baring its teeth, barking, snarling at something, and you press that remote and you shock the dog yelps and stops the behavior. Well, actually, that's quite positively reinforcing for you because you think, oh, that behavior stopped. Now you go past another dog and the dog doesn't do the behavior. You're like, oh my gosh, it works. So you're going to keep the shock collar on the dog and you're going to do this a number of times if the dog starts to lunge again. What you're actually doing, even though it's reinforcing to you because you think the behavior is stopping, all you're merely doing is suppressing behavior. You're not actually changing the way the dog feels about the situation is what positive trainers do. We stop behavior by allowing the dog, understanding why the dog is doing the behavior, and then working with the dog so the dog feels differently so it doesn't need to do the behavior. Lifelong change. So where we don't have to use stuff like shock collars for the rest of your life, for the rest of the dog's life, right? We don't ever use them. Shock collar trainers will keep the shock collar on for the rest of the dog's life most of the time because they have to keep that suppression up. It's almost like you've got somebody's fist right next to you and they're going to punch you if you ever put a foot out of line, which is really causes insecurity. So shock collar merely suppresses behavior. It doesn't change behavior and it can increase stress. It can increase anxiety, which can exacerbate aggressive response, exactly why you were using it in the first place.
Yeah. And it also doesn't teach the dog, it doesn't communicate in any way what the dog could or should be doing.
Right. Exactly. And that's the problem. So again, that's why people like them, because they see such, wow, they see such a change in their dog's behavior. But when you don't understand dog behavior, when you don't understand the science of learning, and when you don't understand the fallout from these devices, then you are really creating not just a dog that will show aggressive display in the future, and it could be more dangerous, but you are exacerbating that anxiety and stress in that dog. And that is really bad because that goes into other behaviors. So sometimes you're creating other behaviors you don't want in your dog by using that tool.
Mm-hmm. You know, earlier you said that one of the reasons why we are seeing a resurgence of punishment-based training is that trainers can show results right there in presumed real time. We don't know what's edited or not, but even if it is in real time, and then they show these videos on YouTube, or they show these videos on Instagram, they show these videos on TikTok. And people say, wow, you know, that looks pretty cool. My dog has a problem. We can solve that problem. And some of these trainers travel around the country. It's like a caravan, you know, and they go from city to city saying, I'm going to appear in, some come to Chicago right here. And they say, all right, I'm going to be at this hotel doing this seminar, doing these demonstrations, bring your dog, or in some cases, don't bring your dog. Do you think some of these people should actually be prosecuted for animal abuse?
Yes, without a doubt. If you saw what, I don't know the particular trainer you're talking about.
No, I'm talking about more than one, right?
I mean, Right. So we know that the brains of dogs are very similar to the human brain. We know that our physiological reactions, we have the same neurotransmitters, we have the same hormones. The way that we experience pain and fear and other emotions is very similar. Similar to that of rodents, to dogs, to humans, to other mammals. And we know that. Science has shown us that. So what I want you to do for people who follow that person and other trainers is that instead of that dog that they are manhandling at the end of that lead with a shock collar and doing the abuse that they're doing, I want you to put a child there. And then now we're having a really different conversation. And you might say, well, Victoria, you're too extreme. That's a dog. It's not a child. I am saying, to be honest, when you're looking at brain development and you're looking at that experience of pain and emotion, there's not a lot of difference there. And that's why what these trainers are doing is abusive, because you would never in a million years, if you were in your right mind, do that to a child. So why can we get, or people like that get away with it with doing that with animals? And that is the problem. Dogs cannot speak our language. And humans get away with it in the name of dog training. And that is the tragedy.
And unlike humans, I would suggest, in general, dogs are pretty forgiving. Now, I think that sometimes, personally, I don't know how you feel, is sometimes overstated, actually, because I think that, yes, dogs are forgiving and more forgiving than people, but I think relationships can really be harmed, and dog psyches can really be harmed when they are in not only shock collars, but in any way damaged. What do you think?
I think that if you have a relationship based on threat, it is an abusive situation, and the victim cannot get out. Though sometimes dogs do get out. They retaliate. And then, oh, the dog bit me or bit somebody else, or I never thought the dog would do this. And then what happens to the dog? The dog ends up getting put down. And that's another myth out there, that shock collars are used for dogs to save their lives. They are often the last chance for dogs out there in shelter environments. And that could not be further from the truth. If you've got a dog that has anxiety or is stressed out or has aggressive behavior, the last thing you need to be doing to save that dog's life is to put a shock collar on it.
Very well put. I hope that this conversation, really, if you know someone using a shock collar, because I do believe, Victoria, most people who have a dog love their dog and want to do the right thing. They are either, they have a problem dog and they're so exasperated that they don't know what to do, or they've been sold a bill of goods by a trainer, as you mentioned, who knows how to market himself or herself. I hope that this conversation can be heard by everyone on the planet, because as always, you articulately explain it so well. But when we come back, I want to ask you about what happens when your dog humps you. And also I want to talk about fear-free and what that's all about. Victoria Stilwell is what I'm all about right now on WGN. We'll be right back. International Human-Animal Bond Day is November 1st. International, well, from the Human-Animal Bond Association, whose board of directors I happen to serve on, and also from the Society of Companion Animal Studies in the UK. Both these organizations came together a couple of years ago and said, you know what? No one would have pets if it wasn't for the human-animal bond, which is absolutely true. So, to celebrate that bond, what we're looking for are pictures of your pets with you. And maybe a brief, please, description of the bond you have, why you love your pets. It can be a video also, just so it's 30 seconds or less, please. So send what you probably have in your phone anyway, some pictures of you with your pets or a brief video to Steve at stevedale.tv. Human Animal Bond Association will use it on their website and social media. Victoria Stilwell from It's Me! Or the dog, which people can see, huh?
Yes, they can see. I just finished, the 10th series just finished airing in the UK on Discovery Networks. And so you can see that in the US and in other countries around the world on the It's Me or the Dog YouTube and Facebook channels. So yeah, our 10th season. Can you believe it, Steve? It's been 20 years since I created it. 20 years. Yeah.
Well, and you know what? I don't know many people who have made the difference in the world of dog training like you have. And you came along at just the right time because there were trainers on television, one in particular, who is doing things to dogs, not for dogs, and doing everything. You know, I remember having that trainer on the radio asking him, okay, who are your mentors? Whose books do you read? And he couldn't even come up with a name. And then I pointed out this legendary Karen Pryor, who he's, I've heard of her, I think, you know. So we go from that to science-based training and be kind to your dog like we need to be kind with one another. And thank you for all that you have done for not only dogs, because when you do things for dogs, you help families too, Victoria, and you have helped literally millions of families around the globe. I want to talk to you about humping.
Well, that was a segue. Yes.
You don't buy those everywhere. So you also do these conversations where you just talk to us about random topics on your Instagram page. And one of the topics was humping.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, and this is such an important point, I thought you were going to go to, okay, here's how you train your dog not to do that. But you appropriately said, we have to figure out first what was the dog's motivation for doing this. And you pointed out several possibilities. And it turned out, you figured out, because you're brilliant, you figured out none of those things that any dog trainer, or you know what? I admit, someone calls this radio show and said, my dog is humping me. What do I do? People on the street stop me and they say, my dog is humping me. What do I do? I come up with a variety of different responses. You instead said, I wonder if it could be a medical explanation. And it turned out to be there was one, Victoria. Mm-hmm. And I want to bring up that point because I want you to talk about how sometimes we assume it's strictly a behavioral issue. And it is a behavioral issue, but that behavior is a dog or cat's response to something that's going on medically.
Oftentimes it is. When we look at humping behavior, you know, it could be the obvious, and of course it can be the obvious, but most of the time humping behavior is a way of connecting. And connecting in if you're uncomfortable, connecting if you're really excited, connecting to say hello. It happens during play between dogs. And it's also a way for dogs sometimes to control movement in others as well. So if you've got that dog that comes and humps your leg when a guest comes in, that's your dog trying to make a connection, potentially saying they're not comfortable if they go hump the guest. Maybe they're not that comfortable. Maybe it's the only way that they understand how to make a connection. So there's a lot of different reasons why dogs hump. But I've had many clients whose dogs are humping, and to tell them to please stop. And especially this woman who was taking her dog out in the morning and playing frisbee in the park. And this dog would pick up the frisbee, bring it back to her and hump her leg and didn't stop humping for the rest of the day. And she was telling the dog off and she thought, well, this is my dog trying to control me. And this is my dog trying, you know, maybe I need to get him neutered. But what was actually happening is this dog had hip dysplasia. And so he was asking his person to stop throwing the frisbee. But because she expected him to go pick it up all the time, that's what he would go and do. And that's why he couldn't stop humping her throughout the day as well, because he was just asking her to please stop. And I noticed this because when we went back home after being in the park, I saw him for the one time that he did lie on the ground. When he lay on the ground, he would just be still. And then all of a sudden, he would snap his head back to his hips. And I'm like, oh, wait a second. I think there's a problem there. Of course, fast forward, she takes the dog for an x-ray. There's hip dysplasia. As soon as she got that sorted out and got him on pain meds, the humping stopped.
Yeah, which is brilliant that you figured it out that way. And it's like a murder mystery novel sometimes, right? I mean, you think it might be the obvious, the butler did it. But it turns out that the cook next door did it or something. I don't know. I don't know how to make an analogy out of that. But the fact that you figured all this out is just brilliant. And the dog ended up ultimately going to the veterinarian. I think the lesson there, though, is that it's what I said earlier. Sometimes we assume it's strictly behavior. And while we're seeing behavior, it is a result of something going on medically. Is that more common than one might think?
It is very common. Dr. Daniel Mills at the University of Lincoln in the UK, he is a vet behaviorist. He's done many, many amazing studies. And one of the studies that he's done shows that 80% of the dog that come to his practice and other practices in the area that come with aggression issues or reactivity issues, 80% of those have some kind of pain or discomfort in their body. So we know that dogs are quite good at covering up pain. They don't show it a lot. But we always really need to be cognizant if there is a behavior issue.
That is true. And we'll come back with much more, including learning about Positively courses. These are courses for you that Victoria Stilwell offers. Really? Yeah, she does. We'll explain what they're all about when we come back here on WGN. She is Victoria Stilwell from It's Me or the Dog. Hi, Victoria.
Hello.
All right. So I want to talk about something your Positively.com website offers, which I think is really cool. These are courses that if you have a dog, if you've ever known a dog, if you've ever seen a dog, I mean, you don't need to be a professional dog trainer. You don't need to be a professional groomer. You don't need to be a veterinarian or a technician. Although, if you are a veterinarian or technician, you probably don't get enough behavior or dog groomer or dog trainer even, I suppose. However, this is meant for the general public, as I understand it.
Yes. So we are so excited. We launched them. They've been out for about 8 months now. And they're courses that are really easy and simple, but great to watch, quite entertaining, where you can learn so much about your dog. And you don't even have to have a behavior issue with your dog, but you can learn a lot about body language. You can learn about how to ensure safety, how to gain understanding, build resilience, provide choice, how to encourage adaptability, create confidence. We teach about management and leash skills and how you get started in training. And then all these different skills that we teach as well, how to get your dog's attention, how to greet people, teach your dog to settle, wait, touch, and go sniff. All of these fabulous courses that we offer at Positively.com. And we're also just about to launch our reactivity course, which is a brand new course that rethinks reactivity. So there are great ways to deal with reactivity out there, but we think they're quite difficult for the actual dog lover to do. Trainers can do it pretty easily, but it's hard for dog lovers. So we've really simplified it and come up with a brand new, innovative, and comprehensive way to treat reactivity.
And I think that's hugely important because the problem is so common. So let's define first what reactivity is.
Okay. We can say that it is an overreaction to a certain stimulus, environment, place, thing. And we say it's an overreaction because we all react, right? That's what behavior is. It's our reactions to the environment. But when you've got a dog that is reacting so much, let's say another dog walks past and the dog barks and lunges and makes a lot of noise and lunges towards the end of its leash. And that's what we're talking about when we're talking about reactivity. And it can be the dog wants to chase a car or doesn't like a human, or there can be so many reasons why a dog is showing reactive behavior. One of those major reasons is fear. Another is that they're just excited and being behind a window or in a car on a lead stops their ability to act naturally. So they can't get to the stimulus that they want to go say hi to. But it is an overreaction, and sometimes it can be a really worrisome and dangerous behavior for people to live with.
I think it's one of
and for dogs.
Yeah, I agree. Interesting you just said "and for dogs." I'm glad you said it. Explain what you mean.
I'm saying it's very stressful. If you could think about what you would do, let's say you're really fearful of people as you walk down the street, but yet there's people passing you all the time. And each time you shout at them to leave you alone, even if they're not coming into your space, you shout at them, get away from you, leave me alone. You do that to every person that walks past you on the street. A, you would be looked at as rather odd. And yes, reactive behavior can be really embarrassing for clients when their dogs are reactive, but also how exhausting it is, how stressful it is to have to be in that place enough to have to shout that loudly. And that's what I sort of see dogs when they are reacting. It's like they're shouting really, really loudly.
I'm glad we talked about that last part, because I think that very often we think about our response, which I want to talk about in a moment, and you did mention, but we have to think about what the dogs are. I think we should think about what the dogs are thinking about as well. And oftentimes that isn't considered. So I'm glad you just did. All right. This is one of the more difficult things to deal with because, first of all, the dog may be large. So physically, how do you deal with that when the dog is lunging or reacting however that dog is reacting? It may be embarrassing as well. And ultimately, it may be an explanation for people relinquishing that dog. And people go to dog trainers. We talked earlier, and I don't want to go through it all again. And this is where they go to those dog trainers that use aversive or punishment-based methods, and then they end up with a problem far more worse than what they had in the first place. But then they go to a dog trainer who explains, do this and do this, then do this and do this and do this. Oh, by the way, you need to feel this way and do this way and have those kind of treats. And, you know, when all is said and done, it gets kind of complicated, Victoria. So you say you have found a way to simplify all that?
Yes. We look at two things. I mean, this is the start of it. Believe you me, there's a lot more. We look at two things, safety and relief. Those are two very powerful words in our positively dog training world. And the first one is safety, right? We need to have safety for the person, safety for the other stimulus or stimuli that the dog is reacting to. But we also have to have safety for the dog too. But well, I'm not just talking about physical safety, being safe. I'm talking about feeling safe too. So that's one massive headline we've got to work towards so that the dog feels safe. When the dog feels safe, it doesn't need to react. The other is relief. How can we bring immediate relief for the person and for the dog? And that's our starting point. And from there, we work on that. And then we look at what we call different zones. And we work on how to basically stop your dog from reacting so your dog doesn't feel the need to react. But we also give you pointers on how to deal with your dog if your dog does react. So understanding why your dog is reacting is the very first thing that we do. And then we build upon that. But it's a really easy thing for people to utilize. But as you said about my courses, it is also for groomers and for people who don't understand behavior that much. Dog walkers, or, you know, you're putting so much emphasis and time on walking your dogs and getting your business together and doing that. You might just need a little support on training. Same with groomers and same with all animal care professionals, including rescue workers as well. So that's why these courses are so fabulous. Some of them are 30 minutes, some of them are a bit longer, but I'm telling you, you're going to learn something really powerful.
Yeah, I think all the topics you mentioned are really important, but I think this one is very important right now. We're seeing, or at least in my world, I'm seeing more of this than I have, say, 10 years ago. Do you think that's the case, or are we just paying more attention?
Oh, no, it's absolutely the case, Steve. I know we've always paid attention, but this is, I think the pandemic did have a problem with dogs that were not socialized that well or not exposed to different things. And so now we have a lot of adolescent or young adults that are unable to cope. I don't think it is just the pandemic, but I do think that has a lot to do with it. I do think that as the busier we get and the more we fit dogs into our busy lives, dogs are living lives of confinement. And if you think about it, no, we can't let our dogs just wander around everywhere, but that's what they used to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're confining them in our homes, but when they go out, we're confining them on leashes. We need them because they're safe, right? The leashes are like our dog's seatbelts, so we need them. But because of this confinement, it's causing a lot of stress and anxiety issues because dogs are not having the ability to act naturally. So you do a great talk on enrichment. We've spoken a lot about enrichment, you and I.
Yeah.
But that's why we need to be looking at how we can enrich our dogs' lives in other ways so they can cope with the confinement that we put them in.
Well, speaking of confinement, she wanted a good segue. I think this is a good one. Speaking of confinement, I'm confined to an hour on WGN. Victoria Stilwell, you know I love you, and you know I love talking with you, and so appreciate everything that you continue to do for people and their dogs. Positively.com, that's the website from It's Me or the Dog, the great Victoria Stilwell. Always fun to talk to you.
Thank you.
Diabetes is considered a global epidemic. The prevalence, about 10.5% of adults, even higher in the United States, according to the World Health Organization, as well as the CDC. The prevalence in the U.S. is about 12% and going up. So we need to do something about that. But hold it. Cats, it's an epidemic. It's crazy. It has to do with so many overweight and obese cats. Dogs get a different kind of diabetes. There's type 1 and type 2. That is greatly based on genetics. Here's the thing. Fruit bats, you heard me right, fruit bats eat so much fruit and have so much sugar in their systems in a week, more than we would have in many, many, many months. Our pancreas could not deal with it. We would instantly be diabetic if we ate like fruit bats. So what is it about fruit bats? Scientists are working on that for our benefit and our pets' benefit. Talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.